Welcome to the Not Safe for Work Photography Podcast, where we explore the art and business of nude and erotic photography. Today, we're interviewing Wilbur Walk, who is the owner of Rowdy Digital Images. Wilbur was on the podcast back in episode 31, talking about doing boudoir shoots for the masses. When I posted a couple months ago asking for unique perspectives in the field, he responded. He started doing event photography at alternative lifestyle hotel takeovers. How are things today, Wilbur?
Things are going good.
That's good. I mean, it's Friday evening. It can't be bad.
No.
I guess unless you work weekend shifts, then it could very well be bad.
And it was warm and sunny, and it's still daylight out. So I'm definitely enjoying this time of year.
Oh, it is still light out. You know, I should have done this call on the back porch. Although there's a road out. There'll probably be a lot of road noise. Maybe I'll start doing that. We'll start doing like porch podcasts for the summer. All right. You reached out to me and we're talking about this. And this is something that I have almost no experience in whatsoever. So I'm excited to learn a bunch of new stuff. And hopefully you enjoy this too. This is not just training Matthew and things. All right. We'll start off with, what exactly is an alternative lifestyle hotel takeover?
Well, it's a lot of things. It's the swinger lifestyle, fetish, the polyamorous crowd. Some people show up just to dance. It's not the put your keys in a fishbowl crowd anymore. There's a level of sophistication that the 70s could have never dreamed of. And it's... Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm just thinking of all the things that I've seen and trying to put those into words is a bit of a challenge sometimes. But it's people from all age groups, 18 and older, of course, and all lifestyles. I mean, there's straight, gay, trans, everybody with a pronoun is there.
So you mentioned, it's interesting you mentioned the kind of the swirling for the stereotype of the swinger where everybody shows up and throws their keys in. Nothing like that anymore. What typically happens at one of these hotel takeovers? Is there like a big party downstairs? Is there...
For the weekend for me starts Thursday when I get to the hotel early, so that I can be there first thing in the morning to set up the photo area and help the crew out any way I can, setting up for the party. Registration runs from 3 o'clock on. Friday night party starts around 9, usually with a live band. People just mingling, talking to old friends, meeting new people. Snacks come out around 10:30, 11 o'clock in the hospitality room.
That sounds like that's the part that I care about.
Yeah. And then the band usually winds up around 12:30, 1 o'clock, somewhere around there. And the DJ plays music till 2, maybe 3 in the morning. Then everything goes quiet until the pool party from 2 until 5 Saturday afternoon. A lot of outlandish games and good times there. Then there's a poker run around 7 o'clock where you go to the different stations and they have shots ready for people to do. Jello shots are very popular at these events because you make a ton of them ahead of that time and just keep them in your cooler. The official party for that starts at 9 and runs until 2. Then the music keeps playing until around 3 o'clock, and then Sunday, tear down, pack it up and go home until time to do it again.
So interesting. It's funny. This is making me feel even older than I am, and I'm not that old, but I go to bed at like 9 o'clock. So I assume that as the photographer, you have to stay up as long as there are people that are interested.
Yeah. My official duties with the party take place between 8 and supposedly 10, but usually I keep taking the prom picture part of it until around 11, 11:30 on Saturday night. Oops. But from there, I go over to the fetish crew area where they do, you know, rope tying and cupping and fluorescent wax on the body. And they have people over there that want pictures taken of, you know, this past weekend we had three people who got the ropes done on them and then suspended. And one woman actually was turned into what they call a human chandelier, where they drip the wax on her and then they put candles on her and she just hangs there for a little bit. And it's really, really a cool thing to witness.
Yeah, we've had a couple of people come on and talk about the rope tying. And I know at least one of the models, I think Anna Green, specifically called out that it's apparently very, like the sensation of being tied and restrained is very relaxing for a lot of women. Well, I shouldn't say a lot of women, a lot of people.
I think I would
be going crazy if somebody restrained me. Like, get me out of this thing.
I mean, it looks a lot of fun, but for me, it's kind of a patience thing because you have to stand there still while the rope master ties you in a very specific way, and I'm just too fidgety for that.
They did mention that it takes many hours sometimes to complete the whole thing, so I can definitely understand that. All right, so that is a long weekend. It makes sense that you don't start again till 2, because if you're staying up till 3, then you're probably not waking up till noon.
Yeah, well, it's surprising how many people my own age, and some even older, are like still up at the crack of dawn and in the hot tub and walking around the pool. There's a level of tailgating at this thing that I have yet to see at any sporting event.
Sounds like they found the secret to something. Secrets.
Yeah, I mean, the fountain of youth just might be a hot tub and a good drink.
I am not going to argue with that. All right. So what kinds of photography do you do there? You mentioned prom photos specifically.
Yeah. The main party theme, each night has a different theme, and usually they kind of go hand in hand. Like for February, one night was Mardi Gras. Friday night was Valentine's Day, and then Saturday was Mardi Gras. So Mardi Gras was the main setup there with a backdrop and some scenic props, and I bring out the laptop and the tripod and set up for 2 hours. Just taking photos of anyone who wants them. But I also do in-room mini boudoir sessions. I mentioned the fetish crew. I hang out with them a lot Friday night. And then after I close up shop at the backdrop, I go over there and hang out a while for them, taking more pictures of what they're doing for their purposes and anyone who wants them. So
let's dive into each one of these. So when you say prom photos, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, the pose guy in a tuxedo, or one person, you know, they're both dressed nicely, dresses, tuxedos, all of that kind of stuff. Am I close, or is it the posed part part that's really
that's exactly what it is. It can be singles, couples, small groups. I've had some big groups try and fit in front of the 8x10 backdrop too, with some measure of success. But yeah, that's exactly it. People dress to the theme of the night. So instead of the tuxedos and prom gown, unless that's the theme, it's a lot of people dress nice, but you get some wild costumes too.
Like what? Wild costumes like what?
Well, Halloween, people go all out for Halloween. And you get some movie quality costumes for that. On any other given night, it could be, you know, she's just wearing underwear and pasties and he's wearing a thong. I mean, it up to people dressed like they're ready to go out for a night on the town and everything in between.
Interesting. So this these typically happen. I mean, this is in a hotel, right? And they're wandering around in this type of, it's in fetish wear and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Are the employees there as well?
There is staff there, yeah, but the name Hotel Takeover says it all. I mean, only us at the hotel, signs on all the doors, you know, booked for a private event, no admittance.
That's true.
It's very, very rare that even whenever, like in Gettysburg, there's two hotels that are joined by the conference rooms. And it's very rare that there's any kind of other people booked in the other hotel. So there's no conflict there.
So no folks.
Because there's still that level of discretion, secrecy, privacy, however you want to word it, where, you know, no one who might be there gets outed. The hotel doesn't get a reputation for having those kind of parties.
Yeah.
So there's still that speakeasy element that makes it a lot of fun too.
Yeah, we'll talk about privacy in a bit. I would have added a few questions on that. But let's go back. Let's finish going through these. You mentioned the fetish photography. So you said that it sounded like they almost set up separately in a separate part of the hotel from the rest. So is this like a combined thing where all the different groups come in together?
It's a combined thing. There's a couple major different areas. There's the dance floor. There's my area, which is close by. There's the bar. And then there's the play area. And that's where the fetish people set up their massage tables, their wax tables, any rope rigging that has to be sprung from the ceiling for the suspension, put up a St. Andrew's cross for anyone who wants to be doing that.
Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah.
Some inflatable cubes. They look like giant igloos. So
what are those for?
They're for people to go in and enjoy themselves inside there without having to go back to their rooms. So they're little sex huts.
Oh, I see. It's just to give you a little bit of privacy.
Yeah.
I get it. All right. That almost sounds like something that they'd have at, what is that? Man, I'm apparently losing words and losing things. I'm thinking of the get-together in the desert out in Nevada. The really famous but expensive and now super trendy one. It's fine. Oh. Everybody listening to this is yelling at the radio.
Yeah, and I'm
yeah, you know what I'm talking about, but I can't remember the name.
Yeah, and I'm blank on the bunny, the chicken farm.
No. Hold on. I'm going to remove the silence here. Burning Man. There we go.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it sounded like they've got that way, because I was listening to a podcast where they're talking about that, where they've got like little hotels where you can go and have your, you know, assignations, and they've got little private rooms in the hotel. It sounded like kind of like that, where you're surrounded by people, but you still have a little bit of privacy.
Yeah. And you know, you can leave the door open or close it as however you want.
That's fair. All right.
And they've also started the last few months doing a thing called a dark room, where
I've heard of these, where you just go in and the lights are all out and it's
pitch black, except for a wristband that glows whatever your preference is.
Oh, that's convenient. Yeah. I always assumed when I heard of those that when you were going in, you were basically consenting to just about everything, because it was very difficult to communicate once you're in there.
Yeah, I mean, you can even wear a red one, which means hands off and just, you know, go in and walk around. After a few minutes, the night vision kicks in and it's not all that dark. You can get around without bumping into people, but yeah, it's a lot of different ways to have fun there.
Yeah, I can imagine. All right. So when you're doing fetish photography, I assume that these are a lot more spontaneous. You're trying to kind of capture what's going on. You're not, or are you telling them and posing them? And
no, I'm just an observer with a camera. Mm-hmm. You know, the only authorized camera there, except for their own personal cell phones and whatnot. But yeah, I'm just taking shots any way I can to get the picture, and, you know, always be clicking as it goes. And it's a lot of spontaneity, a lot of standing back so you don't get in the crew's way.
Is it? Yeah, I imagine you have to really kind of try and fade into the background as much as possible.
Yeah. What's nice about the one hotel we go to is the play area is often an open corner, and I can go up on the second floor and the balcony looks down over, so I can shoot from above and get some cool angles that direction. And I don't have to worry about accidentally getting someone's face in the background. And
yeah,
because I have to be very careful of that too.
So, all right. So that sounds interesting. So are you not allowed to capture anybody's face at all? Or do they have like wristbands that show they're, you know, willing to have their face captured, or?
The people who get their pictures taken in the fetish area, you know, I of course, you know, they either approach me and say, I want you to take pictures of this because this is my first time being waxed or cupped or whatnot. Or the fetish crew says, you know, hey, come over, take some pictures tonight. And if it's just me taking pictures for the crew while they're doing their thing, then I'll ask each person, hey, do you mind if I get some pictures of this? And 9 times out of 10, they'll say no, just make sure you send me pictures too. which I have no problem with that, because it's such a cool experience. But it's the people standing in the background just watching.
Oh, I see.
That I have to be
careful. They're not participating.
Yeah.
And they're not.
Yeah, and when I'm editing, I have to go in and blur the background just a little bit more so that no one's recognizable.
I see. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's definitely, I've, you know, never mind. I'm not gonna share. Well, we'll just leave it at that. I am somewhat familiar with the fetish and some of these alternative communities, both from talking with models and knowing some of them personally. And I know that consent is a huge part of it, so it makes a lot of sense that extends even to the photography.
Yeah.
All right. You mentioned also in-room photo sessions. I assume that those are a lot more kind of ad hoc.
Yeah. You know, I do half-hour sessions, couples, singles, whatever. And that's more of a transforming the room into my own little portable studio and familiar ground as far as shooting that way.
When you're shooting in the room, do you have some tricks for trying to make it feel like not a hotel room, or do you more lean into the, like, this is a hotel room, this is a specific kind of aesthetic that we're going for here?
I'm lucky in that they go to medium tier hotels, so it's not like
not too
the tangerine orange wall of a Super 8 in the background. But a lot of the couples decorate their room for the theme of the weekend, and so we can lean into it that way because that's the party they were at when they had these pictures taken. I also shoot in my own room. That way
It's completely, for want of a better word, sterile from all of that.
Because
I mean, I have to tear down my vendor display, the photo backdrop area, plus load my own personal stuff from the room. So I don't decorate, because that would just be one more thing for me to do Sunday morning. I take a different color set of sheets so that it's not just the white and tan of the hotel. So that adds a little bit of color to it and removes it a gradual step away from being, oh, look, that's a hotel room.
Yeah.
I hide the phones and the alarm clock and move things around ways I can get away with, so that it looks like if you had a house with a permanently attached headboard to the wall, that's what you're getting.
Yeah. It's so funny looking over pictures and being able to pick out like, yep, there's the, you know, there's the covered thermostat on the wall, and you know, there's the little heating or cooling unit under the, and oh yeah, that looks like a hotel room. What the, just have such a look.
Yeah. And I discovered this past weekend that I always try for a first floor around the pool room, because that's just easier for loading, unloading, and a lot more fun. I can leave the door open and still be part of what's going on. I found out that the rooms along the long side of the pool bigger than the rooms along the short side of the pool.
Oh, just interesting.
Just because of the way they're laid out. They're probably, you know, if you measured them, they'd be the same way. It's just that everything's kind of rotated differently, that I noticed there's more walk-around room in one of the long side rooms than it is the short side room.
Yeah, and especially for photography where you want to kind of have the longest sight line possible, I imagine that the way the room is set up. Yeah, because what I'm thinking of is most hotel rooms are set up where you walk in and it's long from the door, and they've got the two beds off to on the right side or the left side, but they're lined up again. So if you're trying to shoot down the bed, you're shooting the shortest dimensions in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have a three-step stool that I take with me everywhere, and I've been known to get up on the desk and shoot down from above.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. I'll have to remember that too. Interesting. All right. How often did these parties happen? Is this like a monthly thing, quarterly?
We just had the last one of the season, May, June, and July, with everyone's vacation schedules and everything. They just only go from August through April, and it's one a month. I'm sure there's other groups out there that do more than that, but
yeah,
we are in Pittsburgh, Gettysburg, Indianapolis. We have a party.
Wow.
And it kind of works out that each location gets at least two
during the course of the year.
Yeah, Pittsburgh is kind of the home base. So that's where Halloween and New Year's are. And then usually one more in there somewhere. In August, we're doing an outdoor one, which will be very interesting to do that for the first time.
Where'd you say it was?
What's that?
Where'd you say it was?
It's going to be outdoors.
Oh, outdoors. All right. Sorry. Yeah, I was I don't know that city, but that explains a lot.
It's here. We'll be here in Pennsylvania, but it's going to be outdoors at a campground, and will be a whole new experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. That's going to be wildly different. All right. So it sounds like this is all the same group that's organizing it. Is it typically the same group of attendees? Or I guess it sounds like it's in a bunch of different cities. You probably get a different group of folks in each city.
There's a core group that we see each weekend. And I've been doing this for 3 years now.
Oh.
So you you begin to notice, oh, I didn't see this couple this past weekend. So there is a core group, but there's a lot of new people coming into it, especially the younger end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
My first few parties, I'd say mid-30s and above, but seeing a lot more 20-somethings coming to the parties and stuff. But it's a pretty wide-reaching range of folks.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I've always heard from some of my history, that these are, at least on the swinger side, it's typically folks in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. But I think the fetish crowd swings younger. And I know we've talked with a bunch of models on here that are into the fetish scene, and they've all been fairly young.
Yeah.
I've heard TikTok blame for that, pornography. Like people getting into this stuff younger and younger.
Yeah, I think
we're not going to comment on that. Yeah.
I think it's people are just getting older, younger now. Back in the 70s when I was growing up, you know, someone going topless was a big deal, and now it's not at all.
That seems like every other person has an OnlyFans now.
Yeah.
I know it's not true, because there's tons and tons of people that generally stay offline and don't make a scene.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm 90% sure that when they look back at how the world ended, it's going to be social media. You'll be like, you did it to yourselves, guys. But that's my one social comment for the... All right. So you've already talked about what kind of hotels these occur at. We've talked about some of the other stuff, talked about the flow of the party. So how did you get this invite? Were you participating in the parties and they're like, oh, we need a photographer? And you're like, I'm a photographer. Or do you know somebody? Or how'd that happen?
I kind of lucked into it. There is a group here that you can, a group of strippers that go around. You can have private events at different bars and stuff. They don't have a home club. They just go around to these private parties. And I was following them, and every once in a while I'd chime in on one of their Facebook posts or send an email trying to get some business doing their promo shots. And because if you know the area, there's two photographers who pretty much have a monopoly on that kind of thing. But I saw a post from the organizer about an upcoming party down around Harrisburg. So I contacted them and said, you know, I'm a boudoir pinup photographer. I saw that you have vendors. Do you have a photography vendor there? Because this seems like it'd be a pretty good match.
Yeah.
And they came back with, no, we don't. And we kind of have a deal for you if you're interested. And it was, I could set up my vendor display in exchange for taking their party photos.
Mm.
So I jumped right on that, thinking it was going to be a one-time deal.
Right.
And then during the course of that event, she asked if I'd be interested in coming back. I said, I'll come back as often as you want to have me. He's like, we have these parties almost every month. I'm like, okay, I'm your guy. And here we are 3 years later, and it definitely evolved into a great relationship.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, my first party, the pool area in the courtyard was outside, and my backdrop area was inside the door coming in. And so I just hung out there, and so I really didn't know the full spectrum of what this party was until like maybe 2-3 events into doing them, and I'm starting to walk around and see how things are going and what vendors there were. So it's, you know, went into it pretty much a babe in the woods, and here I am now, so, doing a podcast about it. So
yeah. So what do you think is the most important factor of having kept the gig going for 3 years? Is it, do you think it's quality of photography? Do you think it's the relationship? Do you think it's discretion? Like, what do you think is the most important factor in that?
Wow. That's a rotating list there.
Yeah, because I can think of a bunch of different reasons potentially.
I mean, it's because they're all very important. I mean,
yeah,
the photography might actually be the, for, you know, not wanting to cut off my own nose to spite my face, it might be the least important out of those three things, because even without me, people could still stand in front of the backdrop and click a decent picture with their cell phone. And I'll deny I ever said that. But that definitely the relationship has grown over these 3 years to where it's, I'm one of unofficially one of the crew now, and the people who come to the parties know who I am. I'm not some stranger walking around with a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the discretion, that's just good business sense there.
I have to imagine.
And there's not a teacher, doctor, or senator out there who wants outed for what they do, you know, when they're not at the job.
Yeah. My wife is a teacher, and I was a teacher for about 3 years. And it's something that a lot of people don't realize, but as a teacher, you have a morality clause in your contract. If you're caught doing something immoral, you can and will be fired.
Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, I know probably an equal amount of teachers as I do police officers. Mm. And of the two, I would say that the teachers are watched with more of a microscope when they're not at school than the off-duty officers are.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, just I don't want to tell my wife all my wife's stories. We're not talking about her, but she knew an intern, not intern, what do they call them? We call them student teachers, who ended up getting dropped because she had posted pictures of her drinking underage on her Facebook. I know there's all kinds of articles about teachers getting fired for posting, you know, doing illegal things on their Facebook page or their Twitter. It's been a lot less recently because teachers got the message, you know, don't put illegal things on social media.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're yes. That's the soapbox that I would end up getting up on for the one social comment. I mean, people there's just a lot of double standards when it comes to what people do and what they get teachers fired for. And it's, but we could go on for hours about.
Yeah, but let's talk a little bit about privacy. You've touched on it a couple of times, but I'm sure that folks who attend these have a pretty serious interest in making sure that everyone doesn't know that they're there. So yeah. I know that you talked before that the hotel is cleared of other guests, but how do you specifically help protect their privacy from the photos that you've taken?
For the prom photos, I have a notebook. I'm actually on my second notebook. All I do is I number 1, 2, whatever. Usually I average around 100, 120 photos a party, and they just put in what email they'd like the picture sent to. And I don't ask for names or anything other than that email address. And then that's where I send it to. Because there's a lot of people, they get up to me and they'll be like, what email do we want to send this to? And she'll say, send it to yours because I can't get it at work. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not that these are know, explicit photos that they're getting from in front of the backdrop.
It looks,
it just, I mean,
sounds like they're a little saucy potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, they can be. I mean, there's butt grabs and boob squeezes going on.
but I just had that happen in the bar. The strange woman that I'm married to.
But the photos are branded for the group name and their QR code in the corner. So if someone were to get one of those and go, "Oh, wonder what this is. This looks like a lot of fun." And they zap the QR code and go to the website and go, "Oh, now I know what Mary's into." That could be a potential problem.
Yeah, I could see that.
Then my secret's well.
Yeah, like you said, there've been numerous artists over time that have talked about how they're not the ones at the top of their game, and that's not the reason for their success. The reason for their success is frequently something else. In this case, maybe that's discretion. I definitely see the last thing they want is a photographer that goes around telling, you know, "Oh, I saw so-and-so at the party last weekend, and you'll never believe what so-and-so was up to."
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to remove all these "all rights." I definitely noticed that that's a bad habit I have when transitioning between topics. Ba-ba-ba. All right. So let's talk gear. We've got about 20 minutes left. What type of gear do you bring for these hotel takeovers?
I bring my laptop and mobile drives so that I can throw the photos on there as soon as possible, because I don't trust my cards. So I triple backup everything. Yeah. I have a lighting bag that has 3 strobes in it, probably half a dozen light stands, bring an Octobox, an umbrella, a couple of soft boxes, spare light bulbs, plenty of spare batteries. I bring 2 camera bodies and all my lenses, even though that's way more overkill than I will probably ever need. I mean, the 10 to 24 comes in handy in the hotel room just for the spatial problems we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
But out in the backdrop area, I'm shooting with a 35 because I actually have, you know, the room that I can move back 20 feet from the backdrop and still have a decent photo.
Yeah. And you want to get their whole body. You're not just doing
that.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple setup, but I overpack just as a backup plan.
No, that makes a lot of sense. It reminds me in some ways of almost like a wedding photographer. Yeah. I mean, any kind of event photography. Now, obviously, this is not maybe as important as a wedding, but you don't want to be, you're far from home. You don't, far from your studio. You don't have the luxury of going out at 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. to replace something.
Yeah, definitely not.
All right, you already talked about the lenses you use the most. Is there any particular piece of gear that you just couldn't do this without, other than the camera and the lens? That's a given.
Yeah, I would say strobe and either softbox or the umbrella, just because once the party's going and the house lights are down and it's all the disco balls and the rotating lights and everything, it's a lighting nightmare. So I need that good strong flash to cancel all that out.
Gotcha. Are you bouncing the flash off like a wall or anything, or are you just doing kind of a direct flash? Do you have like a little softbox you use? You mentioned softbox a couple of times, but you didn't mention how big it was.
Just a little softbox. I think it's like an 18 by 24 or something like that.
Gotcha.
A lot of times, though, it's too dark and people can't see to write their email address. So I've gone to using an umbrella. That way, some of that spillover light is enough for them to write neatly.
Interesting.
It's pretty much kind of like the Santa photo setup that you see in the mall, where it's like camera, light, laptop all right there to take care of things.
I see. Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to use an umbrella. Again, whole body picture. You want to get it everywhere. Do you have like a setup that you use to like move around in the fetish side? Do you bring a flash over there, or do you kind of just jack your ISO way up and use the fastest lens you have?
It's actually, I'm shooting 1.2 ISO of 200, and that's really all I need. I mean, over when I'm doing the stuff under the black light, then I have to jack the ISO way up. But it's a very basic, straightforward as far as using the flash and to get the prom photos.
Oh, no. Hold on. I moved on to the kind of the fetish photos, like moving
Oh,
around.
okay.
Yeah. No, I get it. Yeah, the prom photos, you've got control over the area, but once you start circulating, you no longer have control of the light.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, over in the fetish area to get the black light and the glow and everything, I'm shooting at around 1/80th, 180 for the shutter speed, and the ISO is up around 6400
Yes.
to get that, which is, and it's really tricky because the photos that I sent you were done in the dark room. So
Ooh.
the glow was so much more, and there was no white light bleeding in or anything. But out on the floor in the play area, you still have the walkway lights on. So that bleeds out some of the black light, and it's kind of hard to get that black light poster glow the way you do in a more controlled area. So I'm always futzing with the settings based on what the last picture looked like over there.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, and for anybody listening to the pictures he sent me, there was nobody's face in the picture. They were perfectly anonymous. So when you're in, I'm trying to kind of picture the logistics of this. You brought all this extra gear. Do you typically leave it stored in your hotel room and only take out what you need for whatever specific activity you're doing? Or do you like haul around a Pelican case behind you?
No, everything stays in the room over by where the ironing board and everything is. It all tucks into that little area and
I love that you have
makes.
like you've been at these so long that you've like, all right, so I know that, at this hotel, there's space right here that I can use.
That's exactly what it is. Going into a new hotel is the oh my God, what's this place? What's the setup here going to be like? But once I get to a place and I go, okay, I know the lay of the land and I can figure this out, no problem.
That's funny. All right. How do you store the gear for the trip? Do you use Pelican cases like I mentioned? Do you use duffel bags? I've seen some people with the rolling toolboxes. How do you pack it up to bring it? And do you drive or fly?
I drive.
I would not want to fly with all this stuff.
This gig actually influenced me to break down and get a minivan for a vehicle because when I first started, I had a Ford Escape and I could not see out the back window at all. And there was only ever room for my butt in the driver's seat, everything packed around me. But with the minivan, put the seats in the floor and everything lays in there nice and flat. I just look like a soccer dad driving around. But for my camera and my laptop, I have two of those Harbor Freight aluminum cases. Look like, a metal briefcase, if you will. And then I have the rolling duffel bag that one set of my strobes came in, and I just use that for hauling around my lighting equipment. The big part is the two totes, the table, and the pegboard wall that I have to assemble for my vendor display.
Yeah.
And
Is there
it,
like a vendor area in there where everybody?
yeah, the shoes, outfit, the fetish gear,
you know, the floggers and riding crops and electrical things. They have the vendors there for that. There's been a travel agent who's been set up the last few times because for trip to Hedonism for a week.
My wife and I stayed at one just down the beach from Hedonism in Jamaica. And it was actually kind of disturbing. Not Hedonism itself, but we did a snorkeling trip, and the snorkeling trip boat deliberately drove like as close to the Hedonism beach as possible. And they specifically pointed out, they're like, there's the nude resort, you know, get out your binoculars. And it was kind of like, they're just there minding their own business.
Yeah, that's kind of the opposite of what I'm doing.
I don't know. My wife and I have talked about going there, but she's definitely afraid that one of the staff members will have a secret camera and record her. She absolutely, so it's actually interesting talking to you, because she's deathly afraid of going to one of these places and being, you know, recorded as being there.
Some people.
So you mentioned before that you just recently took in a shipment of black lights. Is that for use during these parties, or is this something you're starting to get into more in your own shooting?
They're for me to practice shooting under black light conditions while I have the time to really hone that skill set. And then I hope to start using it more in my own stuff, because it can be really, really cool.
And yeah, I imagine.
I've got, you know, like I said, the next 2-3 months to perfect and explore and maybe offer something new next time around.
Is there a lot of demand for that, to try and come up with new, or is it, do people kind of want the same? I guess if it's the same people coming over and over again, they probably don't want the exact same thing every time.
For me, I always like being able to try something new, because then so many people, before, if you had a nice camera, you considered yourself a wedding photographer, and then came the senior picture photographers. And now there are so many other people out there doing boudoir and pinup that need to try skipping one step ahead every once in a while to do something new, something that no one's seen before.
Yeah, I imagine definitely so with, again, if you've got a core group that comes over and over again, we want to see something new.
Yeah, and each month I have a little, don't want to call it a raffle, but I do a drawing for a free session. And so there's a lot of interest there. And when I talk to people, oh, I'd love to have this done. You know, maybe the black light is something that someone says, you know what, that's really cool. Now I'm going to pull the trigger and actually schedule a session with this guy to do that.
I could see that. All right. I think we've about reached the end of the questions. Is there anything that you thought of during the course of the discussion that you wish that we talked about?
Aside for some shameless plugs, not really.
Well, we'll get to that. That's coming up next. The shameless plugs are coming up next.
All right. Yeah, okay. We covered just about all aspects of this that I can think of fit into an hour.
Yeah. Well, and I hope some people's curiosity is satisfied on what goes on with these types of things and what type of photographic opportunities there may be. Although we should, of course, caution them that they should stay away from the parties that happen in Pittsburgh and Gettysburg and Indianapolis. Those are taken. But there's probably vendors that are doing very similar stuff in the rest of the U.S. And
yeah, there's two, maybe three other groups in the Pennsylvania area that do these kind of takeovers.
There must be a list. There's a lot more interest in this than I thought.
Yeah, there's actually a couple alternative lifestyle clubs in the area too, sprinkled across the Quaker state, which is really funny. There's two down around the Harrisburg, Gettysburg area. And when you think of Pennsylvania Amish country, that's the same area.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that. The Amish need this kind of stuff too. Yeah, that's funny. I took a search for fetish hotel takeover party, and there's a bunch of results. So yeah, naughty revival, two-night hotel takeover, December 6th through 8th, fetish factory, just a lot of them. I don't know, man. Like, on one hand, I'm curious. On one hand, you know, some of the stuff you're talking about jives with some of the stuff that we're not getting into. That's not that kind of podcast. But then on the other hand, I'm listening to this. I'm like 2 a.m. I can't stay up that late. I want to be in bed and sleep by 10. I'm too old for this stuff. Like, I'm just mentally and culturally too old. What if they have a quiet floor? We want to participate for the first 2 hours. Then we're going to go to bed. All right. Do you have any tips on staying up late? The energy drinks?
No, yeah. I mean, I'd blow through a six-pack of Mountain Dew each weekend, but I still, by the time 2:30 Saturday or Sunday morning rolls around, I'm still ready for bed.
Yeah. Caffeine's got more, or Mountain Dew's got more caffeine than most. Yeah, it does. So Mountain Dew is like the original energy drink.
Yeah.
Not quite as much as coffee, though. Wow, coffee's got a lot. It takes like 4 Dr. Peppers to make 1 drip coffee. Huh. Coca-Cola has almost the least amount of caffeine out of the sodas. We are just learning all kinds of new stuff today, aren't we?
Interesting, yes.
Yeah, Coca-Cola Classic only has 34 milligrams of caffeine, whereas Mountain Dew has 55 milligrams caffeine, so almost twice as much. And drip coffee has 115 to 175.
Wow.
Red Bull's only got 80. So drip coffee has twice as much caffeine as a Red Bull.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. All right. Let's get this podcast closed, and let's get us back on our Friday evening, whatever we're doing this Friday evening. And given that it's 8:17, I tell you exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to be in bed in an hour and a half. Are there any models or photographers that you would recommend following and or working with? And I know that you mostly shoot a lot of civilians, not models, but are there any that you've worked with that you really enjoyed working with?
Wow. There's quite a few. Miranda McCobb from the Lancaster area of Pennsylvania is a great model to work with. She was the first professional model I ever shot. And every chance I get, I book with her to do a workshop or something like that, because she's a lot of fun. She's originally a classically trained dancer. She's got the tattoos and the personality that blends in with everything that we've talked about tonight and before. And she's just a great model to work with.
Awesome. I am... Actually, I was not good about this the first time I asked folks, but the last interview I started looking them up when people tell me about them and putting them so I can actually put them into the show notes. So that people who are listening to this can go into the show notes. And I did that last month as well, if you missed it. Hey, she's got a picture when she was with, what's the name of that? They just changed hands. It's Iron Ore Studios now. I have some pictures of some models at that same desk. It's always funny when you recognize studios. You're like,
the Scott Church Studios.
Formerly Scott Church. Now I think it's Iron Ore, and I think it changed hands again.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I haven't been following it exactly. I just noticed that last year when I went there, it was different. What is your favorite piece in your portfolio and why? Your portfolio can be your website. It can be your Instagram.
The favorite piece I have in my portfolio is actually a shot I did with Miranda at the last workshop I did with her. It was at a smaller studio in Lancaster, but it's her wearing this big elaborate beaded neck piece in front of a mirror, and off to the left there's glass block window, and in the background you can see some of the stuff just piled around the studio. And it's, I just love that shot. I mean, it's, I just think it's really cool because it's a little out of the ordinary of the posed in a Victorian setting. It's not the brash as a fetish centric photo. It's, I just think it's really cool.
Yeah.
If I can say so myself.
Yeah, no, it sounds that way. I don't see, is it on your Instagram?
Probably not due to their standard.
I see. Yeah, Instagram sucks. And we hate Instagram.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
I can send it to you later.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'm scrolling through here. I see you worked with InkedPanda a bit.
Yes.
I worked with her, I don't know, 3 years ago. So saw Ayla Evangelista as well, I think.
And who was that?
Ayla Evangelista.
Oh, yes.
Her. Yeah. I saw her in the gallery. I found she was at a workshop. I don't think I worked directly with her. Maybe I did. I don't remember. I have to go back and look. Anyways, all right. Awesome. Do you have any projects that you'd like folks to be aware of? Be aware. This podcast, even though we are recording in April, it is not going to come out. Let me think. May is Taylor. June 1st is, I just had the review with Kat Ross, interview with Kat Ross. And so July 1st is when this will come out. So if you tell people about your project in June.
Okay.
You can tell people about it, but they'll not going to be able to participate.
Don't have any real projects, but I am always willing to book and shoot with anybody. And I don't have another party until first or second weekend in August, I think. So
yeah, you said they're taking a break.
Yeah, so if you're hearing this on July 1st, you've got an entire month and a half to get in touch and we can shoot.
All right. Where would you like people to find you online and send you a message if they wanted to go shoot?
Online, my website is Rowdy Digital Images, RDIGIMG.com. And you can look me up on Facebook and Instagram under Rowdy Digital Images. And if they're interested in the group that I do the parties for, they are mysecretsensations.com, sensations with an I.
So they've even got their upcoming events listed on here. So yeah, so it's a booty camp. that's funny. Super hoes and villains. Wow, they've got this planned out through April next year.
Yeah.
Oh, hedonism too. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Awesome. Anything else you wanted to plug?
No, I think that's about it.
All right. Well, with that, we are done. You can find us at the NSFWPhotographyPodcast.com. On Twitter is at NSFWPhotography. Instagram at the NSFWPhotographyPodcast. Currently have a Mastodon instance at NSFWPhotography.social dedicated to nude and adult photography. I keep a very light hand on the moderation. And also, finally, I'd appreciate if you guys could tell another photographer or model about the podcast and just say, hey, if you get value out of this, share it with them. I would appreciate that as well. So I hope everybody has a lovely weekend. And I know that you're listening to this in 3 months and it may or may not be the weekend for you. This is what happens when I go off script.